Thought to.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good.
Let's start. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa. Dula Jamila. Sequence Yud Kaf Shin to take any body part that needs healing and return it to its stem cell state, where it will be healed, where it will be rejuvenated, where it will be restored. And then we'll return it to the body in its newly pristine state, where it will continue to do its job better and more effectively than it has before. Barchem tacharem, rachame sitkacha, tamid tamlem, betet resh tzadi tov gimel, chasin kadosh, v'rochucha, na'et adata. Tet Kuf Bet, Tet Nunayan. The letters of the month of Tishrei, the Pei that created the planet Noga, the planet Venus, and the Lamed that created the constellation Moznaim, the scales, the Libra. Yachid Geye, Lamcha Penei, Yud Gimel Lamed, Hey Zion Kuf. Shabbatenu Kabel, Shabbatenu, Yodea, Talmud, Kufav, Tadiyud Taf. Reading the verse from Samuel Bet. Vesamti makom leami leYisrael untati veshakan tachta velo yirkav od velo yosifu vene avla laanoto kasher barishona. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. I'm reading from the Zohar, from the Parsha of Bereshit, section 26. And out of the ground, Hashem Elohim formed every beast of the field. Verse 276. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadenu kanenei aleinu maaseh yadenu kanenehu. Ugin da Moshe lamit v'yadam itkere. Ihu uginei itmar begaluta bat ra'a uladam. Lo matza ezer elakelho. Kenegdo, the Kena Muda de Emsaita, Itmar be Uladam, Lo Matza Etzer de Afek, Shekinte min galuta. Ahidikti vaifen ko veko. Vayach bi ki enish. Umoshe ihu bidiokne. Mamash de itmar belo matza. Ezer kenegdo. Rabbi Shimon continued, accordingly, Moshe did not die, as he was always with the Shekhinah in exile. And so he is called Adam. Of him it is written in the final exile, but for the man, the Hebrew word is Adam, there was not found a help, as all were matched against him. So this verse, but for the man there was not found a help to match him, was said about the central column, which is Zerumpin, as there was nobody to help Moshe to bring the Shekhinah out of exile. This is why it is written, and he looked this way and that, and when he saw that there was no man, the Hebrew word is Adam, as Moshe is actually of his own aspect, like the central column. It is said of him, but for the man there was not found a help to match him. The same was said of the central column, as will be explained shortly. And the verse is quite esoteric. The verse in the Torah is talking about when Moses saw two men being beaten by an Egyptian, and he actually killed the Egyptian man, who, according to the Zohar in another location, is the Nefesh of Cain. And he was the Nefesh Ruach Neshama of Abel. And so because Cain killed him, he needed to kill Cain and did so in this way. Now, this explanation is another explanation of understanding. Moshe represents the central column. Essentially, that is the non-Sephirah dot. Moshe left his wife, Zipporah, in order so that God could speak to him whenever he wished, whenever it was needed. Moshe separated from Zipporah, whether they lived together or whether he lived in the tent and she had her own residence, the Midrash never really says. But this whole idea of who is Adam, and then there's Moshe, and then there's Mashiach, and this is an acronym, Aleph, the middle, it's Moshe, and then David, which is Mashiach ben David. So you have the word Adam. And this is the line of souls from the beginning until the end, which is in the new beginning. Does anybody have any questions? Tonight's class is Advanced Reincarnation, class number 28, I believe. It's handout number 15, and it's at the bottom of the handout where it says Reincarnation Discrimination, and this is chapter 9, section 1. Men must reincarnate to clear their sins, because they study Torah and cannot go to Gehinnom, whereas women are not this protected by the study of Torah and can purify their sins in Gehinnom. My commentary. In our generation, this may not apply to men and women in the same way as previous generations. It may apply to people who study Torah and people who do not study Torah. Also in the Talmud, it says that women do not have the mindset to study Torah at the level of Talmud. Yet women are studying this level of Torah today. It is my opinion that what represents a male half and a female half of a soul changes from generation to generation. Gilgulim, reincarnation, really only applies to men and not to women. This is the esoteric meaning of the verse. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains stationary forever. A verse from Ecclesiastes. A generation goes and a generation comes refers to men who reincarnate. However, women are referred to as the earth. They are forever stationary. In other words, they do not return in reincarnation. My commentary. In our generation, the verse is actually applied differently. A better translation to understand my comment above is a generation goes out and a generation comes, and the Malchut of the universe stands forever. There is a certain concept of Malchut that is universal and does not change, while the generation can be modified as to where the male and the female is split. Throughout Jewish literature in general, and Kabbalah in particular, the earth is considered an aspect and a personification of the feminine. Malchut is the preeminent female aspect of the Sephirot, and one of her attributes is earth. Furthermore, the entire section in the Torah concerning illicit sexual relationships is associated with the earth, its settlement, and its exile from, God forbid. For example, it is written, "And you shall guard all my statutes and all my laws and the land that I brought you there to settle. It shall not spit," the actual word is "vomit you out." The earth takes the place of the widow who is not marrying the brother-in-law. Similarly, if the brother-in-law does not perform the mitzvah of Yibum, then he and his brother's widow perform the mitzvah of Chalitza. In Chalitza, the earth plays a prominent role. He stamps his foot upon the ground. She throws his shoe upon the ground. And finally, she spits upon the ground. And the Zohar explains that the earth here takes the place of the widow, who is not marrying the brother-in-law, to allow the soul of the deceased to come back in reincarnation through her. Since they don't have relations, that soul that died without having children has no way to reincarnate according to spiritual law without his brother marrying and impregnating her, which then allows the reshima that he left in her from his sperm, as we read in earlier sections. But the rabbis developed, or the ritual of chalitza was developed or was revealed because men were not marrying under those conditions. And they were not taking their brother's wives as a second wife. And that these relationships, and even when they did this, the consciousness of the brother was more one of lust rather than bringing his brother's soul. And so because of all of this, chalitza developed. And the ritual of chalitza makes the earth the womb instead of the woman's womb. And it substitutes the earth as the womb that can restore the soul and allow it to come through the cycle of Gilgulim, of reincarnation. The Ari has explained the indication from the verse that informs us that men reincarnate and not women. Now he will give a reason for it, and it is the first reason for this distinction that he is providing here, according to the text of Sefer HaGilgulim and B'nai Aharon. The reason is that men are commanded with the mitzvah to get involved with the study of Torah. Therefore, they cannot enter Gehinnom because the fire of Gehinnom cannot affect them. As it says regarding Elisha, the son of Abuya, he was not judged because he learned Torah, but they did not give him the world to come either, since he had sinned. In other words, when you study Torah, you create a protection shield that does not allow you to go to Gehinnom. Gehinnom is the Hebrew word for hell. It's not the Christian hell. It's not one of fire and damnation. It's one of cleansing. It's a place of cleansing. It's a world where the soul goes and cleanses the connection to physicality. We enjoy the pleasures of this world, and that impacts, tarnishes, and affects us. When we die, every person, even righteous people, go to Gehinnom. The righteous person goes there for a second. And what he does in that second, that instant, is he elevates souls that are ready to leave Gehinnom and go to heaven. Or he elevates souls that are attached to his soul. This is the process of Gehinnom. Now, there are other people who don't elevate through the Tzaddikim. They go through a cleansing process that is extremely painful to the soul. And that's why most people fear death, because they've experienced this cleansing before. And it's painful, and they don't like it, and they have a memory of it, an essence in their soul, and that's why they fear death. But the righteous people know that they're only going to be in Gehinnom a second, and they're going to help people elevate at that time. I'm continuing to read. This is taught in Talmud Chagiga, and we have already learned about it in chapter 4, section 7. We learned there that the Torah protects against the fires of Gehinnom. Therefore, those that learn Torah must reincarnate in order to get purified of their sins. Now we learn for the same reason, only men reincarnate and not women. Understand, purification of sins is the same thing as tikkun. Thus they, the men, must reincarnate to erase their sins in place of Gehinnom. Women, on the other hand, who are not given the mitzvah to study Torah, involved with Torah, can enter the Gehinnom to erase their sins, and they do not need to reincarnate. But women are studying Torah today. They're studying Talmud. They're studying Zohar, Baruch Hashem. Does it mean that they won't reincarnate? Does it mean they won't go to Gehinnom? Not necessarily. We have to understand the woman who studies Torah is doing so by accepting the mitzvah on herself. The man actually has an obligation, a responsibility to study Torah. And this distinction may continue in our generation. Or, in my opinion, it may not continue. And that a woman who studies Torah, who accepts the responsibility and the mitzvah of Torah study, builds a protection shield that does not allow her to go into Gehinnom, and therefore any sin that she does has to be cleansed. She would have to reincarnate. That's the end of chapter 9, section 1. Are there any questions? And you can click on the link at the bottom of the page to open up the next section, the next reading. And you'll notice at the top, this is handout number 16, and it says it's class number 27. This section is titled Cross-Gender Soul Migration, Chapter 9, Section 2. Because of sins such as homosexuality, a male soul might reincarnate into a woman's body, and such a woman will not be able to give birth without great merit, and the entry of a feminine soul into her as an ibur. I'm going to give you some commentary here. We know that there are 248 parts of the body, except there's actually 248 parts of the body for men. There are 252 parts of the body for women. The total of the two is 500 parts of the body to make up Adam, to make up male and female united. 500 is 250 times 2. 500 is 100 times the five worlds. You can see the perfection in this. Now, it's my understanding from some of my teachers that these four additional parts of the body have never been identified in writing. I'm not sure what they are. I mean, I can think of two of one of two, I be the womb, the uterus, and the cervix. But I'm not sure that a man does not have an equivalent aspect of cervix somewhere in the testicle sac. So I don't know for sure. I do know he doesn't have the womb. So there is one part for sure. But I'm speculating. Eventually, it will be revealed by the Mashiach. This is part of what will come down as men and women are come grow in their wisdom, grow in their Torah connection. There must be a reason why no sage ever identified these parts. We didn't need to know it. Now, because of this idea, if it's a male soul, there's only 248 parts. How do you get a soul into the womb when there's no part of the soul connected to the womb? The womb is just a body part for this woman who has a male soul. That's why it's difficult for her to have children. That's why it's impossible for her to have a male child, as we will come to understand. Although women do not reincarnate, they can sometimes come as an ibur into women, together with sparks of new feminine souls. There is another possibility. When they come as an ibur in some other woman, if that woman conceives, becomes pregnant, and gives birth to a girl, then the one that came as an Ibur might reincarnate as an actual Gilgul in that daughter who was just born. What that's saying is the woman becomes pregnant, even though she has a male soul, and the soul that comes in never came through the male soul down into the body. The feminine Ibur that came when the body is created in the womb, she enters that body, and she becomes the soul of the new child. The Ari will return to this phenomenon further in this section. Sometimes a man may reincarnate into the body of a woman because of a sin such as homosexuality. Sometimes a man may reincarnate into the body of a woman because of a sin such as homosexuality or something similar. This woman who has received the soul of a man will not be able to conceive and become pregnant. As I explained, there's no body part. There's no soul part connected to the body part, so there's no way for a soul to enter the womb. The only way is by becoming an Ibur, and a male Ibur would never come into to a woman. Only a female Ibur would come. Sometimes a man may reincarnate into the body I read that already. I'm sorry. This is serious punishment for a male to be incarnated into a woman. Barren women usually suffer tremendously. Men do not understand the drive of women to have children. It's a mitzvah for a man to be fruitful and multiply, to bring children. It is not a mitzvah for a woman, but she has an inherent desire to receive, to do that. And when she is barren, when she is unable to bring children, there are lots of halachot that, in my view, don't make sense, but it's because I don't understand them, of course. But one of those is if you are married to a woman for 10 years and she remains barren, you are supposed to divorce her, even if you love her, even if you want to be with her, because you have the mitzvah to bring children. A woman who is barren, who has this desire to bring children, that it's not fulfilled, it's really painful. Plus, she lives in a society where the women around her are constantly bringing children. And so she's constantly reinforced with this idea she is inadequate, God forbid. It's not true, but this is the correction of this male soul. I'm continuing to read now. This is because she lacks the ability to raise Mayan Nukvim, female waters, and she cannot receive Mayan Nukvim. That's the Ari's language of what I said, that there's not a soul part in the male connected to the womb, so that she can't activate the action. There's no way to activate the body, the soul part of her womb to draw a child, which brings a lot of issues, a lot of information, a lot of consciousness that can be revealed in this world, for the science and technology to develop, if they understand this, how to go around it. And I will also bring the commentary right now. We have male couples, same-sex marriages, adopting children. There was a famous one. He became famous. He's still famous. He's very active. An 18, 19-year-old man raised by two lesbian women who stood up and was arguing and reporting for same-sex marriage in the state of Minnesota. And then his last statement, which was shocking to people, was that he was the child of a same-sex marriage and that, you know, he was straight, but his mother's, both of his parents were lesbians. And he presented a very positive physical explanation. So you have people becoming parents, but these are adopted children. Adoption means that these parents drew that child through the womb of the birth mother. It is not the birth mother's child, but there's a tikkun, a correction between the parents who raise the child and the birth mother who drew the child. And that's what's taking place as an alternative for children to be brought in this way. When you have same-sex marriages, there's a male and a female soul, or they wouldn't have the attraction. But the body parts are two females or two males. And understanding this will also help people change their consciousness on how they deal with these issues. The concept of Mayim Nukvim, female waters, was explained somewhat in Chapter 3, Section 8. Its counterpart is Mayim Duchrin, male waters, or juices that flow from above to below, such as the sperm that is emitted during marital intimacy. In Kabbalah, this term refers to all the light and blessing that flow downward from above. The way the system is to work, you do an action in the physical world that's called female waters. You're raising a flow. You're activating a flow from the spiritual level. That's male waters. The flow down is male waters. The action below that activated that flow is female waters. Obviously, the physical bodies of the partners must be able to function normally in order for procreation to happen. The Ari is adding here that some similar function must also take place in the soul bodies. Souls have masculine and feminine aspects. As it is written, he has created them male and female. Furthermore, the rule in the Kabbalah is that this world is a sort of reflection of what is contained in the spiritual roots, despite the anomaly under consideration here. Thus, the female soul must also be able to emit juice of Mayim Nukvim, female waters, and lubrications that draw downward to herself the male waters, Mayim Duchrim, of the masculine soul. I find it interesting only as a passing commentary. How uncomfortable people are in dealing with sexuality, and especially sexuality dealing with spirituality. You can see the words that are being used here and being written here, how they dance around the subject, and how I expressed it in my way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm revealing something that is should be kept concealed for a while longer. But it's clear to me, as I've expressed it to you, these words are not clear that I rewrote. And the commentary from the sage, from the writer of our generation, is not clear. It's veiling the whole subject because it doesn't start with the understanding that there are body parts that do not have soul parts. When a male is reincarnated in a male body. The male soul that is within her cannot become pregnant or give birth. In this anomalous case, however, as a result of sin, the soul that is within the female body is not feminine but male. The female body in this case will be able to function normally in a biological sense, in a physical sense, to emit female juices and lubrications. However, the male soul that is within her cannot do so. The consequence will be that this woman cannot become pregnant or give birth. This woman will need great merit to enable her to become pregnant and give birth. The only way it can be done is that some other feminine soul must enter her as an ibur. In partnership, they can raise mayim nukvim, female waters, conceive, and give birth. One has a female body, the other is a female soul. She cannot give birth to boys, but only to girls. However, she cannot give birth to not two reasons. The first is as follows. There is a verse that says, if a woman puts forth seed and a male child is born. In the Talmud, it is said, if a woman puts forth seed first, then a boy will be born. If the man puts forth seed first, then a girl will be born. Now this verse, I believe it's in Leviticus, but this verse is very famous. This verse is saying, as we know from the Talmuds and from the Halakha, that it is a man's responsibility to satisfy his wife. Therefore, for him to orgasm and her not to is not proper relations. And what this verse is interpreted is, in one way, is that the woman must have her orgasm prior to the man having his orgasm in order to bring a son. In this case, what we're talking about, of a male in a soul in a female body, the woman is a male just like her husband. In this case, whichever one biologically puts forth seed first, in the spiritual realm, both partners are masculine souls, and it will always be the male who puts forth seed first. Therefore, the child must be female. She cannot give birth to boys, but only to girls. At the time that she gives birth, that feminine soul enters into the fetus. The second reason is that the feminine soul that has entered her does so only as an ibur, in order to help her become pregnant and give birth. Once this woman gives birth, that soul does not need to stay there any longer for any reason. At the time she gives birth, that feminine soul enters into the fetus as an actual reincarnation, Gilgul, and not as an Ibur, like it was at first. That is why the child that is born must be female and not male. Now, we hinted at, but never really made clear, an abuser normally is a righteous person coming to help. But it can also be a soul that needs to borrow a body to complete certain aspects of their tikkun. And so this female ibur that came to help this male soul in a female body draw a child, but the baby grows, it's born, and that soul incarnates because it has a need to do incarnation. But the Creator in His infinite wisdom has created this process for these souls because they are correcting things between each other in this way, on the spiritual level, just as it has to be corrected on the physical level. I'm looking for where I left off. The second reason is that the feminine soul that has entered her does so. Oh, I read that paragraph. The child that is born will be the Gilgul of the feminine soul that entered the mother as an Ibor. Since the feminine soul is not itself tainted with any sin of illicit sexual relations, she must enter a feminine body. Therefore, the child will be a female. In summary, any woman whose soul is a masculine soul, as explained beforehand, cannot give birth to a male, but only to a female. The female child that is born will be the same feminine soul that originally entered to help out as an Ibur. In chapter 38, the Ari will actually relate that the first wife of Rabbi Chaim Vital was the Gilgul of a soul of the type discussed in this section. That is why she could not give birth to a son. Rabbi Shmuel Vital, the son of Rabbi Chaim, through whom the Lurianic tradition was transmitted, was the son of Rabbi Chaim's second wife, who was actually his soulmate. My commentary. Homosexuality is considered an abomination. What is homosexuality? If one reads the verses associated with this, it is referring solely to sodomy. Although Orthodox and Kabbalistic Judaism indicate that it applies to the wasting of seed in any way between a man and a woman, Er and Onan died due to the wasting of seed with a woman. There is also a teaching in the religion to follow the customs of the people. In this area, the custom appears to be changing, although that may only be in the U.S. or in the Western world. I'd also like you to realize I read recently, as I'm preparing a very unique class, as I read recently in my research, that semen from masturbation, the spunk that comes out when a boy or a man masturbates, is different scientifically from the semen that enters when he is ejaculating into the vessel of a woman, to the womb of a woman. I have not gotten to the research to know what that difference is, I will be doing that in the next few months. But it's interesting to notice this idea of female waters drawing the flow and the consciousness that it knows these sperm know whether they're going to bring children or not. Are there any questions? The next section is titled Male Souls and Male Sons, Chapter 9, Section 3. This section continues the previous one, where a masculine soul reincarnated as a woman because of a sin, such as homosexuality, and this woman cannot give birth unless a feminine soul comes to be in a boar within her. In the last section, we learned that in this case of a feminine soul being in a boar within a woman whose soul is masculine, the child that will be born will be a girl. The feminine soul that came as an Ibor will then become the soul of that daughter in a full-fledged Gilgul. If there is surprisingly great merit, then it is sometimes possible that at the time that child is born, the feminine soul that was there as an Ibor will depart and go on its way. A masculine soul will then enter the fetus, and the child will be male. Afterwards, it will be impossible for this woman to give birth another time, unless that same feminine soul returns to be an Ibor within the woman as at first. Whether the child is born is male or female, it will be impossible for that woman to give birth another time. Her soul is masculine, and she cannot give birth without the feminine soul that comes to assist her as an Ibor. However, that feminine Ibor is no longer together with her. If the child that was born is a girl, then the feminine Ibor has become the child's soul as a Gilgul. If the child is a boy, then the feminine Ibor has gone on her way to allow the child to be born as a male. The woman can only become pregnant again if that feminine soul leaves the daughter to become once again an Ibor in the mother. In either case, it will be impossible for this woman to give birth another time unless the same feminine soul returns to be an Ibor within the woman once again, as at first. However, this presents a serious difficulty. If the child that was born was a girl and the feminine Ibor has become that child's soul, therefore, if the first child was a daughter, then this girl will have to die, Chas V'Shalom, and maybe the feminine soul will return to be an Ibor within the woman as it was beforehand. If this woman whose soul is really masculine is going to have any other pregnancy after the birth of a daughter, then that girl will die first. This is because the feminine Ibor that makes possible this woman's pregnancies has become the soul of the daughter. The woman can only become pregnant again if that feminine soul leaves the daughter to become once again an Ibor in the mother. Then she will conceive, become pregnant, and give birth to a daughter whose soul will be the feminine soul that was there as an Ibor. This sequence of Ibor and Gilgul can go on many times, and the laws applicable to it will always be the same. However, if she gave birth to a boy, then the child does not need to die. The feminine soul that was an Ibor within her has gone on her way at the time of birth, as mentioned previously. That feminine soul that was an Ibor must return a second time to be an Ibor within her, the woman, in order that she will conceive and give birth to a girl. The feminine soul that was an Ibur needs to return again to this woman to help her become pregnant again, because the feminine soul needs to enter a Gilgul in a feminine body. The first time a boy was born, maybe the second time a girl will be born. This also needs great merit. It is also sometimes possible, although a girl is born first, that the daughter does not need to die. Even though there will be another pregnancy, it is also possible that the first daughter does not need to die. It is possible that a different feminine soul will come to be an Ibur within that woman, and she will conceive and give birth to a girl, and the soul will reincarnate within her as a full-fledged Gilgul. No soul enters the body of a man or a woman in their lifetime unless there is great affinity between them. This woman with a masculine soul has an Ibur of a feminine soul. Consequently, she conceived and gave birth to a girl. The feminine soul that was an Ibur becomes the soul of the daughter. Then a different second feminine soul becomes a second Ibur, a woman whose soul is masculine. She becomes pregnant and gives birth a second time. The second child is also a girl. The second feminine soul that was the second Ibur becomes the soul of the second child. It is possible that these elements continue to change in this way, pregnancy after pregnancy, whenever this woman conceives. However, this phenomena also needs great merit and a powerful miracle. This is because of a fundamental lesson that we have concerning the secret of Ibur. No soul enters the body of a man or a woman in their lifetime unless there is great affinity between them. This woman whose root is a masculine soul needs an Ibur of a feminine soul. This feminine soul must contain all the qualities that are needed for this Ibur. In addition, it has to have an affinity or a similarity to her. Consequently, this requires great merit, and all the more so if she has come to an Ibur several times, as explained. And it is an even greater miracle to find many feminine souls with the right conditions, and they will also come as an Ibur, each one at a different time. This needs much merit and great miracles. Men and women are different. We think there's affinity between men and women. The only affinity between a man and a woman is if they were one soul before they came into this world. The affinity between a man and a woman that causes them to get married has to overcome the separation of form associated with the reality that a man and a woman are different. Spiritually, when there is a difference of desire to receive, and males and females have different desires to receive, this affinity of form keeps them separate. What draws a man and a woman to be attracted to each other, to bring and get married, all of this process, that they have to overcome this innate difference in the souls, the nature of the souls, the nature of the desire to receive. That's why finding marriage partners is so difficult for the people in our generation. In earlier generations with arranged marriage, the parents created the the environment where the souls accepted their life together. In today's world, the souls have to overcome this innate difference. And there's no outside pressure cooker called parents pushing that to happen. Does anybody have any questions? I will remind you that today is Hoshana Rabbah, starting tonight. After midnight, it is good to read from the book of Deuteronomy, the whole book. It is good to break the gevurot, to beat the willows on the ground in the morning. And it is good to leave the sukkah after that gevurot action takes place, after the beating of the willows. Saturday night, we will have a class on Zohar. Sunday morning at 10:30, we will have a class on science and Torah. Monday morning's class at 5 a.m. is being changed to 11 a.m. The 5:30 class, the basic class will be on relativity, and the 8:30 class will continue the study of the Hakdama of Rabbi Ashlag in the 10 Luminous Emanations. And again, next Tuesday at 8:30, we will have the continuation of Chapter 9 from the Shar Gilgulim. Any questions before I wish you Chag Sameach and a beautiful, beautiful, joyous holiday? Okay. If you have not done, what's it called? Tashlik. If you have not done Tashlik, your last opportunity to do Tashlik is by sundown tomorrow. Remember, on Rosh Hashanah, we were judged. And on Yom Kippur, that judgment was sealed to be unchanged. Except it can be changed because it's held in abeyance until Hoshana Rabbah, where it is handed to the angels to implement the judgments. You have until tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, sundown tomorrow, to complete your teshuvah, to make changes in the judgments for the year ahead. Have a beautiful, beautiful holiday. Shalom.
Hello.
Yes.
When is the night study? Is today or tomorrow?
Tonight.
Tonight?
The night study is tonight, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That's why it's good to read the book of Deuteronomy tonight.
And are you going to have connection or not?
No, I am not going to have a conference call. This is something everybody needs to do individually or as a minion if you have a minion to go to.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Nope.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.